On this week's OIS podcast, Paul Karpecki, OD, interviews Joe Berardi, OD, an industry leader with years of clinical, strategic, and senior leadership experience. Currently, Dr. Berardi serves as president and CEO at Euclid, whose mission is to improve the lives of patients globally by providing the best technology and highest quality solutions for myopia management. Let's listen in.
Hello. This is your host, Dr. Paul Karpecki from Kentucky Eye Institute here in Lexington, Kentucky. Welcome to the all-new Optometry Innovation Podcast. We really couldn't think of a better first guest than Joe Berardi. Joe is a longtime friend. He has a long history in eye care, starting on the provider side. Actually, if I think back to it, I believe when talking to you when we first met, I think your uncle or one family member you started working with like at age 13 or even really young, right in the field, then crossing over into industry. So we're going to get to that into that today, but amongst many things that Joe has accomplished. And I really, the nice thing about an interview like this is Joe has so much to share from where he began, and he's been in academia. He's been an entrepreneur from the very beginning, even though involved academic side and then practice side, and his wife, Teresa, as well, is an optometrist who ran a lot of practices, then into industry, and then today, at Euclid. Look forward to hearing about that too. So thanks for joining us, Joe.
Thanks for having me, Paul. It's really exciting, especially to be here with a good friend.
Thank you. Let's tell the listeners a little bit about your personal background, kind of your path into eye care, which I kind of touched on, but I'd love to get more an understanding. I was just vaguely remembering that from maybe 22 years ago when we were driving somewhere around New York, going up to SUNY, and where that's currently led you since that time.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm happy to share that. When I was 12 years old, I first walked into my uncle's optical. He was an optometrist and my dad an optician. And they had a lab on premises, and really in the 1950s and 60s, they were already doing 1 hour eyeglasses back then. They had a full surfacing lab, and it was a real blue collar town, a lot of manufacturing. And so people would come on their lunch hour and get a pair of safety glasses or reading glasses, and they no appointment necessary. You walk in and you'd get your glasses an hour later. They were, pretty early innovators, I would say, before that was popular. And I just got fascinated with the eyes and with optics at that age, and started asking if I can work there after school. So I was actually going there after baseball practice or soccer practice, and started learning about the profession and about eye care, and was just fell in love with it at a very young age, and started working in eye care back then and really never stopped. Just, always felt very passionate about all the different areas, worked for ophthalmologists, optometrists, just tried to really understand the whole profession, got involved in trying to understand industry even back then as a young student of eye care. So for me, I just got passionate about it at a very young age and never stopped. So from that time until today, just always loved the eye care profession, and not just the eye care profession individually, but what you can do with it outside of just what many people think of in a private practice or a group practice type setting. And that's, why I went into academia. That's why I went into entrepreneurship. That's why I went into large companies, really just as a student of the entire industry. There's so much you can do with this profession and with this optometry degree.
Yeah, speaking of so much you can do, for listeners who may not know you, all the details, you started right out of optometry school, then you went to academia or into practice, I believe, correct?
Yeah, I started in practice. So this was the early 90s, I think we graduated at the same time, and went right into practice. In the first 3 years, started three practices. So I had, was starting about a practice every year, had at one point, 10 private practices. And in the early 90s, managed care was really a hot topic. If you remember the Clintons and really focused on healthcare back then and on managed care, and HMOs were really going wild. So I started an IPA, an independent practice association with about 25 other practices. And we started contracting together as a group with insurance plans. And SUNY found out about that and asked me to come on board full-time to SUNY and start up a managed care division for SUNY to contract in the New York City area. And so I agreed to do that and stayed there for 10 years. We started a very successful IPA. We ended up having about 1,200 practices in it on behalf of SUNY. I had contracts with United and Aetna and Cigna and all the big players for medical eye care in the New York City marketplace. And after a few years, they asked me to be clinic director and moved up from running the IPA on behalf of SUNY to taking over CE. And I think that's where you and I first met back in 95, 96 timeframe. And then took over the clinics a couple of years after that and became clinic director. And again, entrepreneurship was exciting for me. So even within the SUNY context, starting an IPA was very entrepreneur on their behalf and this managed care division. Then I started a laser refractive surgery center within SUNY in our facility. And then when I became clinic director, helped to start up about 10 new clinics in the New York City area on behalf of SUNY as well. So always kept that entrepreneur spirit, even within a academic institution. You know, I enjoyed starting new companies and new organizations within that organization.
That's great. And then who was the first company when you moved into industry? Was it Zeiss? Was it trying to remember a little bit?
Imaginations.
That's right. Now Rendia. Very good. Okay.
So one of the other fun things I did was went totally electronic at SUNY. So we went EMR back in the early 2000s at SUNY. I think probably one of the largest academic institutions in eye care to do that. At the time, I don't think there was any other optometry schools clinics that were fully automated at that point, but we went totally electronic medical record with all scripts back then. And one of the things I found was amazing was that there was really no digital education at that time. So as I started to research out digital education, there weren't a lot of options, but iImaginations, now Rendia, was one of the few companies out there really trying to educate through a digital media, not just through the trifold brochures that you would hand to patients. So I, as I like to do, got in my car, drove down there and checked it out and tried to understand what they were doing and fell in love with that company, the 3D medical animation to educate patients much better. And, you know, patients retain things better visually, as you can imagine. I left SUNY and decided to invest in, and that was really one of my first entrees, I would say, into industry, was joining iImaginations as a chief operating officer there and an investor in the company. And it was a great, great experience.
That's awesome. Yes. And you're right. That's still great, valuable technology I use every day.
Yeah.
In clinic. And and we'll get into some of the other ones, but has that always been just a characteristic perhaps of success for our listeners, is to look for unmet needs? Is that something you just kind of naturally have spotted, or it's just part of kind of who you are?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great lesson in entrepreneurship and leadership, is looking for where the opportunities exist. So I think it's being ready for them and taking a risk in those areas that you really believe in. And so for me, it's always been finding that opportunity of need. And, you know, if I can get passionate about it, really dig into it. And certainly with iImaginations, I did that. Joining Zeiss, I did that because OCTs were that new technology that people didn't understand why they needed it or what it was for. And it just clicked with me. Why doesn't everybody have one of these? It was seen as a research device back then when I joined Zeiss, and I enjoyed bringing that, helping to bring that to market. And, you know, then after that, it was tear science and dry eye. And now with Euclid and looking at myopia management. So always, if you look back, it was, and managed care at SUNY even before that. So it was always areas where the need existed. There weren't a lot of options available. And I just felt passionate about how we need to take control of that and make it either a standard of care or help our fellow practitioners in figuring that out and having great solutions for it. I've always been passionate about that, really, even right into practice. Rewinding a little bit, my first practice I went into, I went paperless as well, you know, 1993. And I purchased OfficeMate and walked, you know, with my very first practice and really worked on very, very early versions of electronic medical records back then.
Fascinating, that little being able to be ahead of it too. But even just, like you said, finding, you know, where there are opportunities that are present to us all the time. It's just being observant, looking for them. And the passion has to be there to get to the next level. So now we'll fast forward through a number of big companies and small companies, everything through that. And now it's Euclid Systems. Managing, as you said, myopia in children. Tell me a little bit about that company and also kind of, you know, what your vision is.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So Euclid is a 25-year-old company. So very early on in the myopia management space, founded by a husband and wife team and formerly from industry, and just saw a need, again, even back then, for addressing myopia using RGP gas permeable lenses and ortho-K. And so not a lot of options back then. So really niche market. And they really focused their attention on looking globally on where the biggest unmet need is. And even back then realized that in Asia, there was a very high level of awareness and concern about developing myopia. And so about 10 or 12 years ago, really invested heavily in China and set up a separate sub-corporation in China and really focused a lot of research and efforts in that marketplace, knowing that there was a lot of receptivity to Ortho-K and concern about myopia. And over time, that has done really well for the company. So they've developed many different design lenses, has seen very significant commercial success, not only in Asia, throughout all of Asia, particularly China, but through all of Asia, but also globally in Europe and in the US, still very strong presence as well. And the company's done extremely well and got to a place of growth where they needed to hand it over to some bigger players. So Hill House private equity firm purchased them about 2 years ago. Just a little over a year ago, and decided to invest heavily into additional growth in Euclid Systems. And so we've been currently focused on manufacturing and scaling the business. We doubled the size of our manufacturing facility back in 2017. And we're doubling the size of that manufacturing again next year. So we're building onto the factory today to double the size of our manufacturing just to keep pace with our growth. And we're seeing that growth at a global level. So very aggressive growth in Asia, but also seeing the US and Europe come on board as well with a lot more awareness into the importance of myopia and myopia management at a very young age.
That's really awesome. You're right about the numbers. They're pretty astronomical. Asia here all over and only growing, you know, in terms of where they're at. So there's, you know, obviously we have a lot of aspiring colleagues. You said something at the beginning, just the number of opportunities that exist within being an optometrist, not necessarily just in practice. Look at all the number of things you've done, which makes life pretty exciting and continues to allow you to grow. So if you're, you know, if someone's 24, 5 years old, you know, in optometry school or soon to graduate, what advice would you give them if they're thinking, you know, and listening to this, that sounds like a pretty exciting path I might want to pursue?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the answer, you know, I'm almost embarrassed to say it, but sort of the world is your oyster, because even all the things that I've worked on and have been part of, I feel like I still haven't done everything. I haven't been a researcher. I haven't, you know, there's still areas
with
my optometry degree that I could get into that I still haven't, even though I've been involved in so much. So I would say to really just broaden your focus and really look to where your passion lies and see if you can, you know, use that to drive value in our industry. And if you're passionate about sales and marketing, there's plenty of opportunities to use your degree for that. For professional affairs and relations, you can do that in industry as well. You can go look to academia, and even if you don't feel like you're the academic type, there's a way to use your entrepreneur spirit in academia for those reasons. As I mentioned, research is always one of those. I'm doing what you do, educating our colleagues on areas that you're passionate about, you know, getting into lecturing and just, you know, sharing your knowledge and your expertise with our colleagues, another, you know, great way to use that. Or just running an amazing practice, you know, getting into practice, whether it's private or group or whatever venue you're comfortable in, you know, there's nothing wrong with that either. You know, using your degree to care for people every single day is something that I know many of us are passionate about. So I would just say, you know, really expand beyond. We can certainly use more optometrists in leadership positions in large companies. When I look around at many of the large companies out there, I still see a lot of room for optometry to play a very significant role in those organizations as a CEO, as a, you know, head of professional relations, as a researcher, or as an entrepreneur, as a, you know, someone who's developing great solutions and technology. So that's what I really recommend, just exploring all of that. Ask a lot of questions, shadow people, you know, reach out to people who are successful in those positions. And I'm sure many of them would be happy to mentor and guide as well.
It's awesome insight. And I agree. I think there are so many opportunities. You just have to really get out there. I mean, half of it is just showing up, but then there's, you know, that's actually going to put you in the top 10%. You know, that means taking risks, giving it a try, being open to the world as your oyster kind of thing. And then the rest is, you know, some vision and hard work and the giving side, which you said was so profound. I think when, if you look at it from the standpoint of what can I give to the profession, how can I educate, like you described, I think that goes extremely far. Yeah. So a time ever where you didn't have things work out so well, or you had a negative experience, but that you were able to grow from it or learn from it?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, one of the practices that I started didn't do well. I thought it would be a good location for a practice. It was in a good town and a good geography, but just never took off. And I realized some of the important lessons there. I would say resilience has been a big theme in my career, and knowing when to be resilient and keep going, and when to cut your losses and move on is something that I found is just, you know, something that really comes with experience and time, but has to come with taking risks. So if I never took that risk, I never would have learned any of those lessons. Even some of the startup companies that I was part of hit bad times, you know, bad quarters, bad years. And you have to decide, is this something that's worth pursuing and being resilient on and really fighting for that, what you believe in? Or did you just make a mistake and need to move on? And I think learning those lessons is critical. And, so you want to fail. If you fail, you want to fail fast and fail forward. It's kind of how I think of it. Absolutely. I've had failures. I've learned from them, moved on, and I'm grateful for them. I mean, really don't know if I could have learned those lessons otherwise without taking that risk, trying it. You know, as long as they're calculated risks and you know you can recover from it, it's worth pursuing.
It's a great answer. It's going to help a lot of listeners, helps me. We all need those reminders because it is so fundamental to success in any aspect of practice. You know, whether you're going to do academic teaching, education, running a company, all those sort of things. What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of probably my ethics. I feel like in every company I've been in and every organization I've been part of, I've tried to, you know, always be honest, always try to treat people with respect and dignity and fairness. I've made tons of friends along the way, like you and so many others, that I'm just really grateful for all of those experiences. I'm grateful to our profession for giving me the platform to have all those experiences. But I'm, you know, most proud of those accomplishments. You know, I've had a great, strong family that supported me through my entire career and continues to do that. So I think there's not one area that I feel proud about. I think just looking at, you know, the path all the way through here, I feel proud that I've had the opportunity to, you know, to leverage my degree in a way like this, and really experience so many great experiences because of optometry and because of the training I had and because of the network of good friends and people I've met along the way. So
wonderful. I'll wrap up a couple more things, but sometimes also I learn so much when I ask people who have accomplished so many things and given so many tries and continue to advance and move the profession, make us all proud that, you know, you're an optometrist, but where do you see the profession 5 to 10 years? And I know that's a tough question because no one saw this year coming. I mean, this was the year of 2020, the year of vision. Who could have predicted it's the year of COVID? But so it's a tough question. But, you know, you've been in so many areas and you've experienced so many things. And certainly myopia control is a huge part of the future. But, you know, no crystal balls. But where do you see the opportunities for the profession in the next 3 to 5 years or even further?
Yeah, well, innovation is going to continue to be the primary theme, in my opinion. The innovations in our profession, and I can only speak to our profession, I, you know that best. But what really excites me about the ophthalmic space in general is we never sit still. There are always new innovations. There are always new ideas and opportunities to improve the health and welfare of people's vision. And so for me, I continue to see us, you know, pursuing that even more aggressively as technology advances, as we get access to smaller microchips and, you know, better understanding of science. We continue to take that, leverage it, and use it to advance our technologies in myopia, in dry eye, in cataract surgery, in glaucoma, in drug delivery devices, in surgical procedures, you know, laser and refractive surgical type procedures. All of those areas, you know, I feel like we're going to continue to just do better and better with newer innovations and continue not only in our diagnostics as well as our therapeutic opportunities. So I've always loved going to OIS and the innovation summits that are out there because it never ceases to amaze me. Every time I attend one of those events, you meet some really incredibly bright people who are passionate about innovation and have some incredible ideas. And not all those ideas are going to work. Not all those ideas are going to see the light of day, but many of them will. And it's really exciting to see what's happening in innovation and ophthalmology today. So I continue to see that as where we're going to head in 5 years from now. Just the speed will continue to increase over time. You know, 20 years ago, it took a long time for things to get to market. I think we're getting better at that. We're getting better at seeing it from idea to business viability to execution much faster than we did before. So I'm excited about that. And, you know, again, there's not just one area within ophthalmology. I think it's really across the entire disease spectrum within ophthalmology, even rare diseases. We're seeing some exciting things because it's technology driven, artificial intelligence and the ability to use those types of devices to improve people who have low vision or partially sighted individuals, so forth. Mm-hmm. Just incredibly exciting opportunities across the whole spectrum of vision care.
Joe, that was outstanding. A wonderful interview. Very, what I love about the interview is so much insightful information for the listener. It wasn't just, you know, about you. You're always that way. You've always been one who's given, and this is why it came across so well. So I think this can help anybody who listens, whether they are in industry, whether they are an optometrist, whether they're starting out, whether they've been practicing for many years or on any level of what we discussed. And I learned a lot. It was great. It was really terrific to get this time with you again. Thank you for being our inaugural guest. You'll always be that for this new Optometry Innovation Podcast. So I couldn't think of anyone better. And it was obvious by the interview. That was a great choice. Thank you, Joe.
Congratulations to you, Paul. And I really appreciate what you're providing here through this venue as well. So I'm honored to be part of it. And I want to thank you again for thinking of me and I wish you the best of luck with this new podcast. I will certainly be listening every single time.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Take care, my friend.
All right. You too, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this excellent discussion with Joe Baratti, OD. We hope you found it as informative and forward-thinking as we did. For more great content, be sure to subscribe to the OIS podcast at OIS.net/subscribe. See you next time.